Sit down, I'm beat. The three of them went into the living room. Daniel sat on the couch and Christy fell into it beside him. Teague flopped into the chair, putting his feet up on the coffee table. While he wasn't bothered by Teague's feet on the table, the number of empty beer bottles on it did get his attention. The TV was on, and a local news anchor was going on and on about the violence around town, as well as around the country. Atlanta wasn't the only place falling deeper into chaos. Daniel squeezed Christy's thigh. She looked up and smiled. I see you've met my cousin Teague. She smiled back at him, then looked at Teague. Yeah, I came by and surprised him. He scared the crap out of me. Teague shrugged. Sorry, didn't expect anyone. Pointing at Daniel, he added, He said he was going to call when he was headed this way. Lucky I was here. Yeah, I was real lucky he dropped by since I left the door unlocked, Daniel replied. Then he looked over at Teague as he took another pull off the beer. What? You really need to pay more attention, especially right now, Christy replied. Teague just smiled. Indeed. Well, what brought you out to Atlanta? Daniel asked Teague. He's wandering, Christy replied. Wandering, huh? Yeah, just wanted to get out of Michigan for a while. Figured I'd better do it now before there's nothing left to see. That shouldn't take long, considering the way things are going right now, Daniel replied. Then he asked, How's everyone doing up there? Teague looked at the floor. Good. Everyone's good. Daniel replied as he finished his beer. I'm starving. You got any food? Christy asked. Don't you remember the epic grocery haul from the other day? Take a look and see what you can find. Christy jumped up. You guys hungry? Teague rolled his head on the back of the chair, starved. I could eat something, Daniel replied. Christy headed for the kitchen. Daniel watched her leave, and once she was out of earshot, he sat up on the couch. What are you really doing here?
Dude, I told you. Just wanted to travel a little.
Really? Daniel said in disbelief. That shit up there didn't have anything to do with you, did it?
What shit?
Dude, don't even try to play with me. You know what I'm talking about. Daniel fired back. Teague quickly sat up in the chair. I didn't have anything to do with it.
Sure, some of my friends did, but I wasn't there.
I figured it was something like that. All that anti-government crap you used to spout off.
You guys want a burger and some onion rings?
Christy called out.
Hell yeah, Teague called out.
Sounds good, babe. Teague leaned towards Daniel and tried to whisper.
Dude, she's hot.
I heard that,
Christy shouted, her back to them at the stove. Daniel smiled.
The problem is she knows it, too.
Hey, I heard that, too. Watch it, mister.
Daniel looked over to see her pointing a spatula at him. Daniel smiled, and Teague let out a loud laugh.
You know I love you, babe, Daniel said.
Christy's back was to him, watching the burgers on the stove.
Whatever.
So, you really didn't have anything to do with it? Daniel asked.
No, I told you. I'm just on vacation.
Cool. Let's find something to watch.
How are those burgers, babe?
Daniel shouted.
Burned if you keep it up.
Chapter 4. Carlos sat at his desk with his head in his hands. All the riots lately have taken a lot out of everyone. Now things were going to a whole new level. Sutherland and Andrews were in the hospital with gunshot wounds. Things were definitely getting serious. The fact that all weapons were now outlawed made no difference. Most people had not turned them in, and certainly not the typical gangbanger. Hell, even he didn't put all of his weapons on the forms he had to fill out as a law enforcement officer. They said he could keep his, but Carlos didn't trust the government any more than the people currently burning down the city. The only difference between him and the rioters was that he wasn't ready to start lighting fires yet. Another officer walked by him and paused.
Hey, Carlos. They're going to be all right. Word from the ER is neither of them had serious wounds.
Carlos looked up.
Thanks, man. That's good, real good.
The other officer quickly moved off, and Carlos looked at his desk. It was mounded with paperwork that needed to be completed, but he just didn't have the energy or give a shit about doing it. Under the new laws, the use of the rifle and the ride changed the entire dynamic of how the city would deal with them from now on. The first thing the APD did was to call the FBI and tell them about the shooting of two of their officers. Now, in addition to the state investigation into the shooting, there would be a federal one as well. But that was above his pay grade, and other people had to worry about that. He knew, though, that at some point, he would probably be interviewed by the FBI and GBI, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation. His phone rang, and Carlos picked it up without even thinking.
Carlos!
Carlos, this is Richard Folsom with the FBI. I'm on my way down. Can you hang out till I get there? Carlos rocked back in his chair and looked at the ceiling, shaking his head.
Yeah, sure. How long till you get here?
My team will be there in about 15 minutes. Rubbing a hand through his hair, he replied,
I'll be right here. Got nothing better to do right now.
Thanks, came the terse reply, before the line went dead. Carlos hung up the phone, then stomped on the floor.
Well, shit.
What's wrong? A female voice asked from behind him. Carlos spun around to see Detective Nora Fitz from the Vice Squad.
Some dick from the FBI is on his way down here to interview me, I assume.
Dick? That's a little harsh, isn't it? She asked with a smile.
No, he's a real dick. Some guy named Richard Folsom.
Dick, Nora said, shaking her head.
That's damn funny, she added as she walked away.
Daniel, Christie, and Teague sat and ate the hamburgers and the onion rings. Teague was stuffing a couple in his mouth, his head slightly back, looking at her. Not only was she hot, but the girl could cook. The TV was on CNN, and footage of riots from all over the country flashed across the screen. The ticker at the bottom slowly crawled across the screen with other news facts. The NYSE had been shut down at 1 p.m. when the circuit breakers kicked in due to excessive losses. In California, police were looking for whoever attacked a Girl Scout campout, killing three young girls.
What's going on at work? It must be crazy down there, Christie asked, between bites of her burger.
The question caught Daniel off guard, and he almost choked on a mouthful of burger. Recovering, he looked up.
Yeah, you might say that.
Christie and Teague both sat there looking at him, waiting for more. When he didn't continue, Teague said,
And?
And what? Daniel replied.
What happened?
Christie asked.
Nothing really. Just the same stuff you see there, Daniel said, pointing at the TV.
Teague looked at the big screen.
More than I'd want to deal with. That's part of the reason I left Michigan.
Me too. I haven't been anywhere near the business district, but I was told today I may have to go to the ER to help out, Christie said.
She was a pediatric nurse that worked in the neonatal unit. Daniel looked over at Teague.
Yeah, some bad shit up there, huh?
Teague stared at the screen.
Yeah.
How long is Teague staying here? Christie asked.
I don't know. How long you staying here? Daniel asked. Teague just shrugged his shoulders. I guess till you kick me out.
So you're leaving tomorrow then?
Daniel, that's not very nice, Christy fired back.
Teague just laughed and Daniel followed suit.
He can stick around, I don't care. Looking at Christy, he asked,
Why are they sending you to the ER?
She shrugged.
I guess things are getting really bad in there. I walked through, and it was just lined with people. I don't want to go down there.
I don't think you should. If they say you have to go there, you shouldn't go back to work, Daniel replied.
I wouldn't go, Teague added.
Christy was shocked.
How could I do that? If the ER is so swamped, they're pulling nurses from other departments, then they really need help. I'd have to go. I couldn't not go.
You could also get stuck at the hospital. You know the bank has a dorm in the basement?
There are even private rooms for the more important people, Daniel said.
Teague took a drink of beer.
Figures. Rich-ass fat cats with their own little bunker in the bank.
What's it for? Christy asked.
Daniel shrugged.
I don't know. I just found out about it.
After finishing their burgers, Daniel said he was tired and wanted to go to bed. Christy said she'd go with him, and Teague said he was going to stay up and watch TV for a while. Daniel went to a closet and got out extra blankets for Teague and threw them at him before heading to bed. Teague was sleeping with his face wedged into the joint between the arm and the back of the sofa, sound asleep. He opened his eyes. Was it a noise? Lying there, seeing only the fabric of the couch, he listened.
Knock, 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 resonated from the door, very loudly and with force.
Teague bolted upright, his blanket covering half of his head.
The knock came again. He jumped up, looking around, not sure what to do.
Looking back at the door, he called out,
Who is it?
After a brief pause came the reply,
Agent Richard Folsom with the FBI.
Teague's mouth fell open, and it took a conscious effort on his part not to piss on himself. For a moment, he didn't know what to do. Quickly crossing the room, he pulled his pistol from his bag and checked the action. Moving back to the door, he looked through the peep. There were two men outside. That struck him as odd. If the FBI knew he was there, they would send the same SRT team to kick in the door as they did in other takedowns.
What do you need?
Teague called out.
Is Daniel here?
Teague jerked his head back, looking at the door.
Daniel? They wanted Daniel.
Yeah, let me get him.
Teague headed for Daniel's room. Stopping by the bathroom, he shoved his pistol into the center of a stack of towels on a shelf over the toilet, then went to Daniel's door and opened it. Daniel and Christy were lying there, and Christy was sleeping commando.
Dude, the FBI's here.
Daniel was asleep when the door opened. All he heard was FBI and here. Sitting up in the bed, rubbing his eyes, he asked,
What? Who?
Teague was half-leaning into the dark room, holding onto the doorknob.
The FBI is at the door, asking for you.
What? The FBI? For what?
Daniel asked as he got out of bed.
How the hell would I know?
What's going on?
Christy asked as she sat up, covering herself with a sheet.
The FBI's here, babe, Daniel said.
The FBI? For what? What's going on?
I don't know.
The knock sounded from the door again. Teague looked over his shoulder.
Dude, you better go find out what they want.
Yeah, I'm going,
Daniel said as he pulled on a pair of shorts.
I'm gonna grab a shower, Teague said as he headed for the bathroom.
Daniel walked past him and headed for the living room as Teague went into the bathroom. Closing the door, Teague leaned against the door, trying not to lose it.
Looking at the stack of towels, he reached in and pulled the pistol out. Its mere presence reassured him. Looking around the bathroom, he knew he had to find a better place to hide it, but still have it handy. The obvious places would be searched, and he was about to just stick it under the sink when his eyes fell on the toilet. Gently taking the cover off the tank, he laid his Rock River 1911 into the bottom and replaced the cover. It would probably be searched as well, but at least it was out of sight. He quickly turned on the water, making it exceptionally hot, and got into the shower. He was so nervous, all he could do was stand there and stare at the curtain in the direction of the door. Daniel turned on a lamp by the sofa as he headed for the door, then looked through the peep. Two men in blue windbreakers with FBI in yellow letters were standing there, obviously annoyed. They looked up simultaneously as he opened the door.
"Sorry, I was asleep," Daniel said. "I'm Richard Folsom. This is Chris Collins. May we come in?"
Daniel rubbed the back of his neck.
"What's this about?" "What happened at the bank yesterday?"
"Oh, that. Yeah, come on in."
The two men followed him in. Daniel flopped onto the sofa, threw his feet out on the coffee table, and crossed his arms over his chest. Agent Folsom took a seat in the chair, and the other one just stood there, looking around.
"Who else is here?"
Agent Collins asked. Daniel looked back over the sofa.
"My girlfriend and my cousin."
Agent Collins looked back towards the bedroom.
"Where are they?"
"She's back there in the bedroom, and I think he's in the shower. So what can I help you guys with?"
Agent Folsom set out a notepad on the table and flipped through some pages for a moment, looking at the notes intently. Looking up, he asked Daniel to tell him what happened.
"I guess you're asking about the shooting?"
"That'd be a good place to start," Folsom said, with a nod.
Before Daniel could start, Christy came out and sat down on the sofa, moving away the blankets Teague had left scattered around. Daniel looked at her, then back to the agents.
"This is my girlfriend, Christy."
The two agents nodded, and she smiled and looked at Daniel.
"What's going on?"
"Daniel's about to tell us," Collins said.
Everyone in the room looked at Daniel. He went on to describe the events on the roof of the garage, the Molotov cocktails, the man with the rifle, the shooting of the two officers, and finally of the LT with the APD asking for their help. When he finished, he was leaning forward on his elbows, looking at the table. Agent Folsom took notes as he spoke and flipped through the notebook as he relayed the story.
"You shot someone?"
Christy asked, with a little shock. Without looking up from the notebook, Folsom asked,
"Who fired first?"
The question caught Daniel off guard.
The guy with the AK?
Looking up, Folsom asked,
"No, you or Bob?"
Daniel fell back into the sofa, letting out a huff.
I think I did. Bob was on the phone with the cop."
Folsom nodded his head, flipped through the notebook, made a note on another page, then closed the book.
"Well, your story lines up with Bob's."
"Am I in trouble or something?" Daniel asked.
"I don't see any problems right now. You guys were backing up the police at their request, so you're good for now."
"He's taking an awful long shower, isn't he?"
Agent Collins said, stepping towards the hallway to the bathroom. Daniel and Christy both looked back towards him.
"I guess," Daniel said.
"Why don't you check on him?"
Collins said. Daniel shrugged and stood up and headed for the bathroom. He rapped on the door.
"Hey, man, you still alive in there?"
The door jerked open. Daniel jumped back a bit, bumping into Collins, who was standing very close behind him. Teague stood there with a towel wrapped around his waist, drying his hair with another.
What's up?
Teague asked.
Nothing. Just wanted to make sure you didn't drown, Daniel said, as he headed back to the sofa.
Teague followed him into the living room with Agent Collins right behind him. Teague went to his bag in the corner and bent over, opening it up. When he bent over, his towel fell to the floor. Christy let out a little giggle. Teague looked back at the agents, who were not the least bit amused to be staring at his bare ass and ballsack. Teague picked the towel up and wrapped it back around himself, collected his clothes from the bag, and straightened up. He held the clothes up and smiled, then headed for the bathroom to get dressed.
I'll be in touch if we need anything else, Folsom said, as he headed for the door with Collins in tow.
Daniel followed them to the door, thanked them for coming, and said he would cooperate in any way he could. After shutting the door, he could hear Collins say,
That kid's a smartass.
Teague was in the bathroom with his back against the door, leaning on the vanity for support. He was laughing so hard, tears were running down his face. The only thing keeping the sound in was his hand clasped over his mouth. With the building empty, Gene took up his preferred post while at work, in his small office in the bowels of the building. He felt at home in the engineering spaces of the giant place. Sure, it wasn't like being on board ship, but it was as close as he could get. Asleep with his feet up on the desk when the phone rang, he nearly fell out of the chair. What was left of his tuna sandwich, resting on his chest, fell on the floor. After flailing about for a moment to regain his balance, he answered the phone.
Engineering! You awake, Gene?
Am now, Bob. Thanks. What's up?
I knew you'd still be here.
You plan on going home anytime soon? Things are quiet outside right now, if you want to bail out.
Nah, I'll just stay here. No reason to go home.
Well, come on up to my office. We'll have a drink.
Sounds good to me. On my way.
Say, Gene, you still hiding that illegal 45 in your desk?
Gene replied with a chuckle.
Of course I am. Bring it with you, then.
Gene found Bob at his desk, 1 foot propped on it. In hand was the omnipresent cigarette. In the other, he cradled a glass of scotch. Only this time, it was in a clear tumbler. Gene fell into a chair across from him. Bob leaned forward and slid the bottle and another glass across the desk. Gene quickly poured himself a little more than 2 fingers of whiskey. Taking a sip of his whiskey, Gene asked,
Why are you still here? Why not go home?
Same reason you're still here. Nothing to go home to. I already have 2 ex-wives. Just an empty house, my friend.
Gene laughed to himself.
Amen to ex-wives. Mine divorced me as soon as I retired. So long as I was in the Navy and stayed gone for a year at a time, we were happily married.
Hung around to get half of that Navy retirement, huh?
Yeah, damn bitch,
Gene replied, laughing.
So what the hell's going on around here?
Bob laughed, filled his glass, and gave Gene a rundown on what had happened, telling him about the riot and the shooting. When Bob wrapped it up, he dropped his butt into an empty cup on the desk and refilled his glass.
Damn, you killed him?
Gene asked, as he leaned out for the bottle.
I guess. He wasn't moving and was on fire last time I saw him.
Where's Daniel? Getting drunk someplace?
With a chuckle, Bob replied.
Yeah, probably. I am.
The phone on his desk rang. Bob looked over at it, then drained his glass. Daniel hung up the phone and looked at Teague and Christy.
I have to go back to the office.
What? Why?
Christy asked. That was the FBI agent. He said I needed to go back there and go over what happened again.
Dude, you want to go out in that?
Teague said, pointing at the TV. They were watching the news, and things all over the metro area were getting out of hand again. News of the shooting had found its way to the media, who were now reporting on it, though they had it wrong. The story the news media was putting out was that the police had shot two rioters in Buckhead. There was no mention of the two officers that were wounded. This news pissed off the already unsettled masses in the streets. Atlanta wasn't the only city having trouble. Cities across the nation were in the same shape, having exactly the same troubles. Several reports of exchanges of gunfire between the police and rioters were all over the news. The incidents of shootings of both police and rioters were increasing. Both sides were escalating the use of violence. The fact that the banks were still closed, EBT and debit cards were not working, and no one had access to cash unless they had it on hand, was combining with the rise in violence to create the perfect storm. The federal government's response was heavy-handed. As a result of the Lansing incident, the president invoked the Insurrection Act of 1807. The act was amended in the 2007 Defense Authorization Act and provided to the president more power than the original act. Section 1076, subsection 333, was changed to read, "When the president determines that the authorities of the state are incapable of maintaining public order." This was the end run on the Posse Comitatus Act that allowed federal troops to be used domestically. This section, along with Section 334, which provides, "The president has authority to order the dispersal of either insurgents or those obstructing the enforcement of the laws." These were the tools used to justify the violent reaction. Protesters were listed under Section 334. When the various governors failed to gain control of the spreading riots, the Fed stepped in. Section 333 was used against those refusing to hand over their firearms. It was as if the demise of the country was being orchestrated and everyone was playing their part in tune. While the White House focused on the issue of guns, one they've salivated over for years, the economy was circling the drain. Commerce in the nation was essentially halted. Cash was king, and no one had any. That is, until the markets started to tank. A week's worth of double-digit percentage point losses signaled the end of the dollar. Trading was permanently halted a week later.
"I don't want to stay here. Can I come with you?" Christie asked.
Daniel looked away from the TV. "You guys want to come with me? It's certainly safer than it is here."
"I do. Teague, you coming?" Christie asked.
"Sure, why not? Let's go see what the belly of the beast looks like." Unlike his last trip to the bank, this time Daniel wasn't stopped by the police. There weren't any.
"Where are all the cops?" Teague asked.
Daniel's head was on a swivel. He was watching the people running through the streets. Every business they passed was being looted. It gave him an eerie feeling seeing the people of the city tear it apart with absolutely no concern about being caught.
"This is really messed up," Daniel said.
"It's scary. Hurry up,"
Christie said. Teague was looking out the back window.
"These people are like animals. Look at them."
Daniel called Bob and told him he was on his way in, and that he was told by the FBI agent to come back.
"Yeah, I talked to the dick, too. I'll be waiting on you. When you come in, pull into the underground section. I'll open the gates for you as you pull up."
"Thanks, Bob. By the way, I've got my girlfriend and cousin with me. They didn't want to stay at my place."
"The more the merrier."
Daniel was sitting at the entrance to the garage as the gate rolled up, when Teague shouted,
"Holy shit!"
Daniel looked out the window to see a squad of riot police running before a massive crowd of rioters. The officers were in full-on every-man-for-himself retreat. The three of them sat there transfixed on the scene. They watched as one of the officers was dragged down by the crowd, like the slowest zebra in the herd. He was set upon by the swirling mass of people. It wasn't long before one person held his helmet aloft. Then other pieces of the riot gear began to appear, hoisted like trophies.
"Get your ass in gear!"
Bob's voice blared from an intercom mounted on a pedestal at the gate. Daniel's head snapped around to see the gate was open. He floored the van and was in the garage in a flash. The gate immediately began to close. The rioters were more than a block away, but Bob wasn't taking any chances. Daniel shut the van off, though he couldn't tell as the engineering space he was parked in was so loud. It didn't miss the sound of the diesel engine. He was looking back at Christy in the mirror when there was a knock on his window. The sudden knock caused him to jump in his seat. Looking out, he saw Jean standing there, the broad smile on his face hidden with those whiskers. Daniel stepped out as Teague got out of the passenger side and opened the rear door for Christy.
"Scare easy?" Jean asked.
"Not usually. Thanks for the effort, though."
"Bob was afraid you'd get lost. Sent me down here to make sure you didn't get eaten by the hogs."
"There are hogs in the building?" Christy shouted over the din around her. Teague started to laugh.
"No, it's just an old saying. Went to shit and the hogs eat 'em."
The explanation didn't clear the issue for her.
"So there are no hogs?" she asked, looking around.
Jean let out a laugh and led the trio through a door and to a freight elevator. On the 10th floor, they changed to one of the public elevators to get Bob's office. They found Bob where Daniel had left him, sitting at his desk, cigarette in hand. Daniel looked around the office, looking for the agent.
"The dick's not here yet," Bob said.
"What do they want? What are we supposed to do?" Daniel asked. Christy and Teague stepped into the office, interrupting Bob's answer. He looked Christy up and down with raised eyebrows. He quickly stood up and offered her his hand.
"Hi, I'm Bob."
Christy smiled and introduced herself, then looked around the dark, cluttered office. She was just about to sit down when the lights went out for a brief instant before coming back on. Bob looked up at Jean, who nodded and left the office.
"What was that?"
Daniel asked.
"Andy, what's up?"
Bob called through the open door. Andy shouted his reply.
"Power's out. We're on generator power now."
Bob excused himself to Christy and stepped out. "See anything out there?" Soon, everyone was in the outer office looking at the monitors. In full HD, they were watching the chaos on the streets outside the bank. In the short time since they had arrived, the mob on the street had moved up the block, past the bank, and were constructing barricades in the streets. More fires were now burning, piles of tires that threw up huge clouds of thick black smoke. Across the street from the bank, buildings were being looted. Andy was panning the cameras around, and the view on all sides of the bank was the same. They were completely surrounded.
This doesn't look good," Bob said.
Then he turned to face everyone.
"We may be here a while."
"What do you mean by that?" Christy asked. Bob pointed to the monitor.
"You want to go out there?"
"Don't worry, we'll be fine here. They'll get the power back on soon, and the police will push them back," Daniel said.
"How long will the generator run the building?" Teague asked. "I don't know. When Jean gets back, he can answer that," Bob replied.
The phone in Bob's office rang. He stepped into the office and answered it, and after a few moments, he returned. "Was that Jean?" Daniel asked.
"No. That was one of the security guys. He said the folks outside are raising hell on the security shutters."
"They can't get in here, can they?"
Daniel asked.
Well, I mean, it's possible, but it's not likely.
Bob picked up the phone again and called Gene, asking him to come up to his office. While not happy about the request, Gene said he was on his way. While waiting for Gene, they watched the cameras. The crowd outside was getting bigger and more riled up by the minute. The protesters on the street woefully outnumbered the police forces. They simply could not field enough officers in any one part of the city to make a meaningful difference. "What's that?" Christie asked, pointing at one of the monitors. Everyone turned to look at the monitor she was pointing at to see a Humvee sitting far down the block. On top of the truck was a large square object. Bob told Andy to zoom in on it so they could get a better look. As the truck grew in size on the screen, the object mounted to the top became clearer.
"It's an LRAD," Bob said.
Christie looked over at him. "What the hell is an LRAD?"
"It's a sound cannon used for crowd control," Bob said.
"What the hell is a sound cannon going to do?" Christie asked.
"Oh, it works. They used one earlier to great effect," Bob said with a grin.
Gene came to the door looking none too pleased to be back in Bob's office. He announced his arrival with a loud sigh, making it obvious he did not want to be there. Bob looked up at him with amusement.
"Sorry to call you back so quick," Bob said.
Gene didn't even crack a smile. He was not amused.
"What do you need, Bob?"
"How long will generators run the building?" Bob asked.
Gene rubbed his whiskers for a moment, thinking.
"I think it will run the building for about 36 hours under full load."
Bob rocked back in his chair, putting his hands behind his head. Now he was thinking.
"What can we do to extend that time, just in case it's needed?" Bob said.
Gene shrugged his shoulders, holding his palms out, as if the answer were obvious.
"Reduce the damn load." "Well, there's nobody in the building right now but us. What's the biggest load we have?" Bob asked.
Gene thought about that for a minute.
"I would have to say lighting and AC are the biggest loads."
Bob let out a sigh.
"Damn, turning off all the lights would take forever to do in this building."
Gene laughed.
"You want the lights turned off? Is that all?"
Bob swiveled his head around to look at Gene.
"Yeah, that's all."
"Andy, move your ass,"
Gene said. Andy swiveled around the chair and stepped out of the way. Gene flopped his ass in the chair and pulled the keyboard out from under the desk. Using a side monitor, he opened up a program. Once the program loaded, he swiveled around to look at Bob.
"You want them all off?"
"We should probably keep some minimal lighting on in the building, but I would like to have everything visible from the exterior turned off."
"Okay, all exterior lights and all exterior office lights. That do it for you?"
"How will the cameras really see what's happening outside once it gets dark?" Daniel asked. Without looking from the monitors, Bob replied.
"We have both thermal and IR cameras." Bob looked over at Daniel and grinned. "We can see in the dark." "Go ahead and turn the lights out, Gene."
Once all the lights were shut off, Gene suggested they shut down two of the generators. With no more load than they had running, one generator should carry it, though he would have to check the load to ensure they could also run the cooling towers and chiller plant. Bob agreed and asked him to go take a look and see what they could do to conserve fuel for the generators. There was no telling how long the power would be off.
"Worst case, we could shut down the chiller, too. Might get a little warm in here, but it would save on fuel," Gene said.
Bob nodded.
"Shed as much of the AC as you can. See if we can buy ourselves some time."
Gene nodded and spun back around in the chair and began pecking away at the keyboard. Graphics of the building appeared, showing various systems as he shut them down. "Where's that FBI guy?" Christie asked.
"From the looks of things outside, I don't think he's coming, Teague said. All this time, Teague had been standing in the corner, staying quiet and keeping to himself. He was a little nervous at the thought of being in such close proximity to an FBI agent. Daniel and his hot-ass girlfriend had no idea what he'd been up to, and he wanted to keep it that way. Getting his family involved in his troubles was the last thing he wanted to do, but the war on the streets below them would surely keep the feds away.
Yeah, don't think Dick's coming, Bob said.
Christie leaned over to Daniel and whispered into his ear,
Who's Dick?
Daniel turned his head slightly and whispered back,
The FBI agent. Bob calls him Dick.
Hey, Bob. The largest load running in the building right now would have to be the servers and their cooling equipment. You think we should shut them down too, since the bank is offline? Daniel asked.
Before Bob could answer, the phone rang. Bob palmed the phone.
Yellow.
Bob, you need to pull up the camera facing the east exit of the parking garage now,
the voice on the other end said. Bob told Andy which camera to pull up.
Why? What's going on?
You'll see in a sec.
When the video popped up, they could see the large security gate on the screen. Bob leaned in toward the screen and said out loud, more to himself than anyone else,
What the hell is that?
The voice on the other end of the phone answered the question.
They're using a saw to cut through the gate. It's some kind of chop saw.
Holy shit.
Are they cutting their way in? Daniel asked.
Sure as shit looks like it, Teague said.
Bob directed his attention back to the phone.
We cannot let them get through that gate.
Well, what the hell do you want me to do about it?
I don't know, but we have to stop them somehow.
Shoot the fuckers, Teague said.
Everyone in the room turned and looked at Teague. He simply shrugged his shoulders and stared back at them.
What else are you going to do? If they get into the garage, they can get into the building.
Bob looked back to the monitor.
Go down and bang on the door, see if it scares them away. We're watching you on the camera.
All right, I'll give it a shot. But if I get shot at, I'm shooting back.
They all watched the figure on the screen move towards the security gate as a steady stream of sparks spilled from it. There was no audio, just the sight of the figure moving towards the gate. He held a 12-gauge shotgun up at low ready. When he got to the gate, he banged on it with a balled fist and the sparks stopped. They watched as the man kicked the gate and it appeared he was shouting at it. Suddenly, the security guard jumped, ducking his head, and pressed himself against the wall beside the security gate. From his actions, they could only guess what was happening. He was being shot at. Bob still had the phone. He could hear the man yelling. He could hear what sounded like small pops. Then he heard and saw on the monitor the phone falling to the floor. The security man took half a step away from the wall and began to fire his shotgun into the security gate. In what seemed to be too short of a time span, he was reloading the tube on the weapon.
Andy, give me an outside view of the door, now!
When the camera view popped up, the screen showed a body sprawled on the ground with something lying by its right hand. Bob told Andy to zoom in on it, and the object rapidly grew in size. A Glock handgun soon filled the screen. Andy backed the camera view out to take in the crowd. They could see the guy with the chop saw. He was yelling and gesturing wildly. People were running in all directions. Several of them were being helped, as it appeared they were wounded. Inside the garage, the camera there showed the security man pick his phone up. Then Bob heard him scream into the phone.
They're fucking shooting at me! Smitty! Get your ass out of there. We'll secure all the gates behind you, Bob replied.
Oh my God, is that guy dead? Christie asked,
no one in particular.
Sure looks that way, Gene replied.
Bob was still watching the cameras. The crowd outside was getting their act together, rolling a dumpster down the road to use as cover to renew their assault on the gate.
Gene, you got anything we could reinforce that gate with?
They're going to get through the gate with that saw, Bob stated.
Gene thought for a moment, sucking on his whiskers as he did.
I've got a couple of package chillers in the basement that came in last week. With all this crazy crap going on, we haven't been able to install them yet. They're almost as wide as the gate, though they are only about 5 feet tall.
It will slow them down. Let's do it. How many do you have?
Three.
Take two of them and stack them against that gate and put one in front of the other. When they get through this one and see the crates, they may try the other. And when they see another crate there, maybe they'll give up.
Why are they trying to get in here anyway? We haven't done anything to them, Christy stated.
They're pissed at the world right now. No one can get to any money. Those food stamp cards don't work, and this is a bank, the epitome of evil from their point of view, Teague said.
That and Bob and Daniel did shoot one or two of them earlier, Gene added.
We need to try and push them back from the building somehow, Bob said.
Aren't the police coming? Christy asked.
I doubt it from the looks of things out there right now, Bob said.
Hey, Bob, when we were on the roof, I saw a pipe for a fire hose. If we had a hose, we could turn it on them, hose them down, and maybe they would pull back, Daniel said.
That's a good idea, Bob replied. Gene, you got some hoses?
Yeah, we got them. How many you need?
All right. Here's what we're gonna do. Gene, you and cousin here go move the crates into place. Daniel and I will get the hoses up on top of the garage and put some serious water on the unwashed masses down there. Andy, you stay here and keep me up to date, Bob said.
What about me? Christy asked. Bob looked at Daniel.
You stay here and give Andy a hand for now.
Fuck that. This isn't some stupid movie where the girl is useless and is the first to get killed. I'm going to help one way or another. The use of profanity surprised Daniel. He'd never heard it come out of her before. Bob raised his eyebrows at her, looked at Daniel, and said,
"Feisty little thing."
"More than you can handle," Christy replied, as she folded her arms across her chest. "Bob, let me and Christy go up on the garage. You need to find your security guys and get them set up. Plus, you can keep an eye on things here and let us know what's going on," Daniel said.
"All right, let's get going," Bob said.
He handed Gene and Daniel each a handheld radio.
"Come on, Daniel, I'll show you where the hoses are,"
Gene said as he headed for the door. Gene, Teague, Daniel, and Christy took the elevator down to the bowels of the building where Gene was more comfortable. He showed Daniel where the hoses were stacked, then went to get his forklift.
"Be careful up there on the roof," Teague said.
"Sorry for all the trouble, man. Guess you picked a shitty time to visit."
"Heh, no worries. It's a shitty time in general right now."
Christy pushed a Rubbermaid cart over, and Teague and Daniel loaded up four lengths of fire hose on it. Then Daniel and Christy headed for the elevator. Somewhere back in the mechanical space, Gene tooted the horn on the forklift. Teague looked over his shoulder and turned to go find the fat man. Daniel looked over his shoulder as he pushed the cart.
"Sounds like your date's waiting."
Teague gave him the finger. Once inside the elevator, Christy leaned against the wall. She was biting her fingernails, a nervous habit.
"Quit. You'll ruin your manicure," Daniel said.
She paused to spit out a piece of nail or something. "Right now, that's the least of my worries." She looked at the stack of hoses on the cart and gestured with her chin. "Is this going to work?" Daniel looked at the cart and shrugged.
"Don't know, but we need to do something."
The elevator opened and Christy screamed. Daniel was leaning over the cart about to push it, and he jerked his head up to see Bob standing there with a cigarette clenched in his teeth and a Cheshire Cat grin on his face.
"Damn it, Bob! You scared the shit out of me!" Christy shouted.
"Sorry, Christy, didn't mean to. I wanted to give Daniel this."
Bob picked up a rifle that was leaning beside the elevator door and laid it on the cart. Christy looked at it, then at Daniel. "Are we really going to need that?"
"I hope not," Daniel answered.
"Better safe than sorry," Bob said with a nod.
"Get up to the roof and see if you can push those idiots back."
Daniel nodded. "We'll try."
Bobby Millsaps and Amy Snap had been partners on the Atlanta PD for nearly 2 years. In the beginning, some of his male colleagues gave him a lot of crap about having a chick for a partner. But she'd prove herself to be just as good, and in many cases, a hell of a lot better than many of the men he worked with. They'd become good friends, spending off times with each other's families a couple times a month. Looking at Amy, Bobby said,
"This is getting to be some real bullshit."
Amy adjusted the riot helmet on her head that was just a little too large.
"I know, they keep pulling us back. Why don't they just let us go in there and end this once and for all?"
A call came out.
"Online."
"Shit.
Here we go again," Amy said.
"Don't worry, I got your back," Bobby said.
Amy looked at him as she dropped her face shield.
"And I got yours."
They marched up the road yet again towards the line of protesters. It was the same one step, bang your shield, take another step. It was meant to intimidate the protesters, but it really didn't have much effect on them. As they closed on the crowd, the second echelon of officers began firing tear gas at the crowd. It had little effect in those protesters that were prepared for it.
"I'm getting sick of this shit," Bobby shouted.
The line of officers continued up the street. As they came in range of the protesters, rocks, bottles, bricks, and Molotov cocktails began to rain down on them. An officer in front of Amy was splashed with fire. Bobby grabbed her and pulled her to the rear of the formation. Officers there were waiting with CO2 extinguishers, and they quickly doused the flames. Bobby was checking her over.
"Are you all right? You okay?"
She pulled the helmet off her head and dropped it on the street.
"I'm okay, but this is just insane."
Bobby looked at the line of officers still advancing.
"It is. We're never going to win."
Amy brushed hair from her face.
"I don't live in this godforsaken city."
Bobby looked at her.
"Neither do I."
He stood up and held his hand out. She took it, and he pulled her to her feet.
"Let them keep it," Amy said.
Bobby nodded.
"You going to be all right?"
She nodded. "You?"
"I'll be a hell of a lot better at home with Sandy."
Amy leaned in and hugged him.
"Let's get the hell out of here."
They would be the first of many, many officers across the country to abandon their posts to take care of their families. Chapter 5. Daniel and Christy dragged the hoses across the top deck of the parking garage to the standpipe on the corner. Christy grunted under the weight of the canvas hose.
"These things are heavy."
"Come on, let's just get it over there,"
Daniel groaned in reply. Once there, Daniel started to screw the hose onto the pipe. Christy grabbed the nozzle and started to stretch the hose out. As soon as she had it laid out across the deck, she shouted to Daniel to turn it on. Looking over his shoulder, he nodded and spun the large knob, sending water ripping into the hose. Christy wasn't expecting the force of the water charging the line, and it quickly got away from her. The nozzle was open, and air was escaping with a loud hiss as the water surged in. When it hit the nozzle,
the hose began to whip around. She jumped on the hose, but was about 10 feet from the nozzle. As the nozzle whipped around, spraying water, she screamed at Daniel, "Turn it off! Turn it off!" Daniel looked back to see a scene out of a Roadrunner cartoon as Christy tried to control the hose. Laughing to himself, he turned the water off. Christy got to her feet, brushed the wet hair from her face, and walked back towards Daniel. "You get on that end. I will turn the water on." Daniel smiled. "You look good out there, hanging on to that thing." He grabbed the bottom of her t-shirt and tugged on it. "Look at you, all wet. You look fine." Christy grabbed his wrist and tossed it away from her. "I am not in the mood." She pointed towards the nozzle. "Get your ass over there." Daniel laughed as he headed for the red nozzle lying on the deck. Picking it up, he dragged it over to the edge of the garage and looked down at the crowd below. They were at it again with the saw, trying to cut through the gate. Daniel jerked the nozzle, pulling a little slack, and hung it over the wall. Looking back over his shoulder, he nodded at Christy. She nodded back and opened the nozzle, sending another surge of water to the nozzle. This time, though, it went down onto the crowd. Christy ran over and grabbed onto the hose behind Daniel, taking some of the strain off him and allowing him to adjust the stream. In a moment, there was a solid stream of water cutting into the crowd below. Daniel laughed like a maniac, seeing the effect it had on the people in the crowd. They ran from the water as if it were acid. Laughing, Daniel screamed, "Look at him run!" Christy looked over the edge, and a smile spread over her face as she watched the stream of water chase people around on the street. Jean set the second package chiller unit on top of the first one. The two covered the door and would make it very hard to get past if they'd managed to breach the door. He was backing the forklift away when a thought came to him and he started to laugh. He looked at Teague.
"Wait here a second, I have an idea."
Going back into the mechanical space, he picked up a pallet and pulled it around to his shop. There, he pulled a small air compressor out and put it on the pallet. Then he tossed an extension cord on, and lastly, he hefted a small drum with a gun attached onto the pallet. Then he dropped a long-handled scrub brush on and headed back to the parking garage. Jean went to the door he had just blocked and set the pallet down. Plugging in the air compressor, he gave it a minute to build up some pressure before picking up the gun. With a smile on his face, he squeezed the handle and started squirting grease on the deck. After squirting a heavy pattern out, he grabbed the scrub brush and made sure the grease was spread out nice and thick. He laughed to himself as he unplugged the air compressor. If these people managed to get through, this may not stop them, but it sure as hell would be funny to watch on the cameras. As Jean walked around the forklift, Teague was shaking his head.
"You are one weird-ass old dude."
Jean grunted as he wedged himself into the seat of the lift.
"You should have seen me when I was in the Navy. Come on, let's go do the same thing to the other gate."
Teague looked down at the greased floor and rubbed the toe of his boot through it. There was no resistance. He laughed.
"Anyone who steps on that is going to bust their ass."
Starting the forklift, Jean barked.
"That's the idea."
Bob was back in the control room, watching the soaking Daniel was putting on the crowd in front of the garage gate. They weren't liking it and were running from the building. While the hose put out a pretty powerful stream, it wasn't strong enough to knock anyone over. The people simply didn't want to get wet. It was kind of odd, really. After all, it's only water. Andy was laughing as he watched.
"Looks like they don't care for the bath."
Bob lit a cigarette.
"From the looks of them, they could use a shower."
Andy was also keeping an eye on the news. A report flashed across the screen, and he picked up the remote to unmute the TV.
Hey, Bob, check this out.
A female reporter came on the screen and began talking. We have breaking news that is very concerning. A Georgia National Guard infantry armory in Lawrenceville has been looted. This means military-grade weapons are now on the streets. A male anchor joined the conversation.
That's right, Denise. With the riots currently going on in the city, things can only get worse if these types of weapons make it into the city.
What's the National Guard saying, Bob?
They've secured the location now and reinforcements are on their way. But they say a considerable amount of their weapons were looted and are unaccounted for.
That can't be good, Andy said.
Bob was shaking his head.
Nope.
Andy picked up the remote and switched to CNN to see what was happening on the national level. The ticker scrolling across the bottom of the screen was reporting the same event in other parts of the country. The talking heads were discussing the consequences.
Cannot help the situation. Weapons of this kind making it onto the streets will only make things worse.
Do we have any idea right now who is responsible for looting these armories?
While it is still early in the investigation, initial reports point to right-wing pro-gun extremists being responsible.
Bullshit!
Andy shouted at the TV. He pointed to one of the monitors showing the crowds on the street outside the bank.
Those aren't right-wingers! Look at those animals!
Bob chuckled and patted Andy on the shoulder.
Calm down, Andy. They're just playing their part, my friend. Just doing what they're told.
News my ass!
They continued to watch the report that went on to reveal the looting of several armories across the country. All of the armories in major cities were experiencing heavy rioting. As they listened, Andy asked,
Don't you think it's kind of odd that all these armories were looted at nearly the same time?
Bob let out a long breath.
Sadly, I don't.
I think this was all planned and not by any right-wing extremists.
That's what I was thinking.
Bob went to his office and poured a cup of coffee and walked back out into the control room.
Personally, I think we're watching the beginning of a revolution.
Christy was laughing hysterically. The people on the ground were running from the stream of water as Daniel chased them around the street. They'd managed to push them back from the building, and the mass was now standing just out of range of the hose, shouting and shaking their fists. In the opposite direction on the street stood a line of riot police. They were banging their shields with their batons and shouting nearly as loud as the protesters. Daniel looked towards the police line, where one of the officers raised his shield in a salute. Daniel waved back.
Look at those cops. They're pretty happy,
Daniel said with a nod of his chin. Christy wiped hair out of her eyes.
They may be.
She pointed to the protesters on the other side of the street.
But those people sure aren't.
Daniel looked across at the rioters. A heavy-set woman stepped out of the crowd and gave Daniel the finger as she cussed at him. Daniel laughed and waved at her, which only agitated her even more. Daniel slapped Christy on the ass.
Come on, let's go back to Bob's office.
She laughed, grabbed him, and kissed him.